Yeah. We're on the bottom of Tezvav Amid Beis. I'll tell you exactly where we're going to start. You'll see a discussion here about Kli Zchuchit. So I'll tell you exactly where that is. Let's see. There are two dots. You count, again, in a standard Gemara, you'll count up about 10 lines from the bottom, going up from the bottom of the Amud all the way up. And you'll see the first word in the line is Kli. It's really clay. Klei Zchuchit. So today we're going to discuss glassware, the halachic status of glassware as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned. And glassware is called Klei Zchuchit. Even in modern Hebrew, we use the same term. Now, when the Torah says that a utensil can be susceptible to Tumah, the Torah actually gives a long list of different materials from which these utensils are manufactured. And glassware is not on the list. And therefore, on a Torah level, midoraisa, there's no kabbalas tuma in a case of glassware. And the entire entity of tuma with regard to glassware is all rabbinic, it's all derabbanon. And the Gemara is going to analyze why the Rabbanon instituted this gzera amongst the various gzeras that were instituted at the time of Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. They instituted a gzera that glassware should be makabel tuma. Now, one of the classic materials for Kabbalah's tuma is called cheres, which means pottery, or otherwise known as earthenware, that's made of sand, cheres. And to a certain extent, glassware is very, very similar to pottery, to earthenware. So I'm not going to use the word pottery from now on. When I refer to a kli cheres, I'm going to use the term in English, earthenware. So if you want to make a note of earthenware, that's made of earth. So the Gemara says the following. So we're on Daf Tezvav Amud Beis, for anyone who came a little bit late, and we're about 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Klei Zchuchis, glassware, was a gzera of two of the greats back in the time of the Mishnah, and they were called Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yochanan. And the Gemara asks, "My taima gozer bu rabbanan tuma? Why did the rabbanan institute tuma with regard to glassware?" Om Rab Yochanan and Reish Lakish, hoel utchilas briyasan minachol. There's something very strikingly similar between the production, the manufacture of glass, and the manufacture of earthenware. And in both cases, it's made from sand. Shavinu Rabbanon ki kli cheres. Therefore, the Rabbanon gave the status of a kli cheres, which, as I said before, is earthenware, which is listed in the Torah in Vayikra Yud Aleph. The Torah says, "V'chol kli cheres asher yipol mehem al tocho, etc., etc., yitma, and the oso tishabru." So in any event, the Torah says explicitly that a kli cheres made of earthenware receives tumah, and we're going to discuss exactly the nature of that tumah. We're going to talk about what happens if a sheretz falls into a kli cheres, what happens if it falls on the outside of the kli cheres, what do you do with the kli cheres if it's contaminated. But the main thing that we want to discuss now is the production of the kli cheres. The kli cheres is produced by gathering sand together. And the same thing is true with regard to glass. And therefore, the Rabbanan considered kli cheres, expanding that definition of kli cheres to include even kli zchuchis, even glassware. So the Gemara says, if that be the case, elameata, if this is true, lo tehelahen tahara b'mikvah, if a kli cheres is contaminated, let's say by a sheretz, for example, then you should not be able to put it into a mikvah in order to purify it. And the reason for that is because by equating kli cheres with kli zchuchis with kli cheres is, the Torah says, tishaveru, which means there's no way that a Kli Cheres, once it has received Tumah, can be subject to Tara, to purification, to Mikvah. The only thing you can do with a Kli Cheres is to break it. Again, you have to break it to the extent that it's no longer functional. Then you could reshape it, and then it's Tar. But otherwise, Mikvah won't help you. Alama Tanan, why do we learn it in Mishnah? The ninth parak of Mikvos, it says, V'elu chotzitzin bekelim. It has a list of chatzitzos. Those are separations that if something is stuck to the side of the kli, and then you put it into a mikvah, it's not a valid purification. And the reason why is because of this concept called chatzitza. And in our shiurim in Erevin, those who are with me for Erevin, we've had long discussions about a chatzitza. And on the list is hazefes v'hamar b'klei zchuchis. So we're talking about different kinds of materials that were used to produce kelim. In the case of mar is one of the various besamim that were used in the making of fragrance, and zephes is a kind of pitch or tar. And on the list, we have here klei zchuchis, which means that you have to remove any chatzitza. So you buy a glassware, let's say from Chutzlarts today, and you want to put it into the mikveh, you have to make sure that there are no attachments to the kli, you know, no, none of those hadbakot, you know, those thing. What are they called in English? You put it on the inside of the kli. They tell you the name of the manufacturer, how much you paid for it, etc., etc.
Labels.
What's it called?
Labels.
Okay, labels. Yeah. Okay, attached labels. Yeah, you should take those off, you know, before you put the kli into the mikvah. But obviously, this mission assumes that a kli zchuchis, like any other keli, except for kli cheres, can be subject to tefillah in a mikvah if you do it right. And you can purify the kli from its tumah. Why don't we equate it with a kli cheres, since it's very similar to a kli cheres? And we should assume that all you can do with a glassware is just break it. There's nothing else you can do with it. So the Gemara answers, Hacha b'mayas kinan. This Mishnah in Masechta Mikvos, which lists all the laws of chatzitza, and how they apply to glassware, kigon shenikvu, there was a hole, a crack, a hole in the glass, and as a result, it's no longer functional. You know, you pour water in it and it'll just fall through. I just recently had this. Last Shabbos, I poured hot water into a glass. It was a very thin glass. And I saw the physics in front of my eyes. There was a long crack that I watched it crack the whole glass. You know, anyway, so this is a case where you had a hole in the glass. And what did he do with it? Hitiv Lesochan Avar. Now let's go slowly. Avar is lead. And hatif means to pour. Lesochan means into the kli. So what he does is he does, like if you have a rip in your clothes, I'm just giving a mushal, then you put a patch on the rip. So in order to patch up a kli zchuchit, what you do is you put a layer of lead, L-E-A-D, lead on it, and then it becomes functional again. And Rabbi Meir he. And now this Mishnah in Masechta Mikvos reflects the Shita Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says, the Omar, Rabbi Meir holds, HaKol Holech Achar HaMaimid. Now what does that mean, HaKol Holech Achar HaMaimid? We define the Kli by that which salvages the Kli. In this case, it's the lead material that salvages the Kli. And not the glass. The glass itself, in and of itself, would be non-functional. And therefore, we define this kli as a metal kli, because it's that strip of metal that you use to clog up the cover over the hole that made the kli functional. And that's Rabbi Meir's shita, that now the kli, this utensil, is defined not as a glass utensil, but rather as a metal utensil, because that which keeps it alive is the metal. That's called a mamid. Mamid means it gives it structure. It gives it function. Tisanya, we learned in a Braisa. The Braisa now records the sheet of Rabbi Meir, klei zchuchit glassware, shenikvu. Alright, with two lines up before the end of the Amud. So you had a nekev. A nekev is a hole. Right? A hole. Right? So you have a hole in a glassware. Vehitiv lesochen aver or avar, and he pours lead into it to clog up that hole. Om Rav Shim ben Gamliel. Rav Shim ben Gamliel says Rabbi Meir mitame. Rabbi Meir holds that the kli now is mekabel tuma. We say that a kli zchuchit, once it breaks, it should have the same status as earthenware, and it should be tar, but no, Rabbi Meir says it's going to be tameh, it's mekabel tumah, if a sheretz falls into it because of this patch of lead that makes it into and categorizes it as a metal utensil, and a metal utensil is mekabel tumah. The Chachomim mitarim, the Chachomim say that this kli is tahar. We're all on a Doraisa level. We're talking about the Torah law. Again, this is before the Gzeir of Chachamim. Now, the status of a Kli Zchuchis, which according to Chachamim still is retained here, is that it's not Makabel Tumah on a Doraisa level. As we said before, glassware is not listed in Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph when the Torah lists the various kinds of Kalim utensils that receive Tumah, and glassware is omitted from that list. On a Doraisa level, it's not Mekabel Tumah, and that's why the Chachamim are talking about Mitarim. Rabbi Meir says, no, on a Doraisa level, this particular glassware is not called glassware anymore, because it was made functional by the lead, and therefore it has the status of a metal kli, which is called a kli mateches. Mateches is metal. And that kli is Mekabel Tumah. So therefore, if a sheretz would fall into this glassware that has been salvaged and saved by the lead patch, then on a Doraisa level, Rabbi Meir insists that it would be Mekabel Tumah. And now we're on the last two words.
Rabbi, wouldn't that be true if it was the earthenware as well? If a sheretz fell in?
No, I tell you why. Because in the case, well, it depends. If it's an earthenware kli that has a hole in it, right, then it would not be Mekabel Tumah because it's non-functional. Now, let's say you put a strip of lead to fill up that hole, you plug up the hole, like a dentist, you know, gives you metal to fill up your hole, then you're right. Then according to Rabbi Meir, HaKol Holech Achar Maimid, which means that now you've changed the status of this utensil, and now it becomes a metal utensil, and therefore it would be Mekabel Tumah. If it was a kli cheres, then since it's non-functional, because you have the hole in it, at that point the tumah would be completely removed, correct? Because that's called shvira, that's what the Torah says you do with a kli cheres. And if you would restructure the kli, it would not have tumah to it, but the problem is that instead of restructuring the kli, you know, putting it back into the furnace, what he did was he put a strip of lead to plug up this hole, then Rabbi Meir would hold it has the status of a metal kli.
But once it's repaired with the metal, it's tumah or it's susceptible?
It's susceptible to tumah. It's susceptible to tumah. Right now there's no tumah because before you put the lead, it was non-functional. So any tumah that it had just completely dissipated. Ela me'ata. Now the Gemara asks the following question. Rav Olson, give me a few minutes to get into this because, as you know, to fit in a blot in 1 hour is nearly impossible. So let's just get into it a little bit. Ela me'ata, if you're telling me that the reason why there is Kabbalas Tumah, Midrabanan, the Rabbinic Zera, in a case of a glassware, is because the Chacham gave it the status of what? Of a Kli Cheres. Now we turn to Daf Tes Zayin Omer Aleph, which is today's Daf. Is Lo Litamu Migabon. The Halacha is that in every other Kli, with one exception, and that's going to be earthenware, if a Sheretz falls on the outside of the Kli, then that Kli becomes tamei. The only exception to that rule is a kli cheres. A kli cheres is only mekabel tumah mitocho, from the inside of the kli, but not al gabon, not from the outside of the kli. The word gav means a back, the back of a person, the back of a utensil. If a sheretz falls on the back of a utensil, if that utensil is made up of any other material, then the kli, the utensil, becomes tummy. But the exception is a kli cheres. And if that be the case, then the same law should apply to a kli zchuchis, and a glass utensil, if a sheretz falls on the outside of this glassware, then the glass should not be mekabel tuma. Alama tanan, why does it say in the Mishnah Masechta Kelim? It says kli cheres ukli neser. Neser is a kind of a special sand. It's a white sand, and you make it into a kli, and it has the same status as earthenware. Is tumas on shava? Then kli neser, made out of this white sand, has the same status as earthenware, as far as tumah is concerned. And mitamim, they receive tumah, umitamim me'avirehem. Okay, this is a whole other discussion. I don't know if we'll have time for this today. But let's say a sheretz was suspended in the airspace inside a kli cheres, then there's a unique halacha in kli cheres and earthenware that it becomes tameh by virtue of what's called avir, the inside airspace of a kli. Again, Rabbi say, don't expect that we'll become experts in Hilchas Tumah Vitara in 1 hour. You'd probably have to spend 6 months on the laws of Tumah Vitara. But just keep in mind that there are two unique aspects of earthenware as far as Tumah Vitara is concerned. Number one, there's no Tumah Migabon. Right? If a sheretz falls on the outside of an earthenware, the kli remains tar. Number two, however, here's a chumrah. In Tumah, as far as kli cheres, it's mekabel Tumah me'aviron. Me'aviron means that sheretz had no contact with the utensil, but nevertheless it was in the airspace of the utensil, and it's kabel Tumah. And number three, a kli cheres has no tvila, it has no tara in a mikvah, it's only shvira, you can only break it and restructure it. And mitamin me'achorehem, okay, that means that if something goes inside and it somehow presses itself against the side of the kli, the ein mitam migabeim, but it doesn't receive tumah from the outside. Ushvirasam mitarasam. The only way to purify a utensil that's made of earthenware is through what? Shvira. You have to break the kli. And now at the end of this quote from the Mishnah, the Gemara makes a diuk to analyze this Mishnah. The Mishnah says, kli neser, ukli cheres. The Mishnah only lists two types of materials that have this special status of earthenware. And guess what? Kli zchuchis, gold, a glassware, is not on the list. It was left out of the list, says the Gemara. Kli neser, ukli cheres, who? Only those two ditumas and shava have that equal uniform level of tumah with all the same dinim and all the laws that apply to both. Aval midi achrini, but something that's made from another substance, for example, gold, glassware, lo, it doesn't have the same status as a kli cheres, which means that it would be like all other utensils made of other materials, and if a sheretz fell on the outside of the glassware, it would receive tumah. That's against the premise that we had here of Reish Lakish, that the reason why the Chachamim instituted a rabbinic enactment of contamination of a glassware is because of its similarity to earthenware. They're both made from sand. Well, then the dinim of a glass utensil should be identical with the dinim of an earthenware. And therefore, just like in earthenware, there is no tumah me'al gabeim, meaning if the sheretz falls on the outside of the kli, it would not convey tumah, so too the same din should apply to kli zchuchis. But the Mishnah left out kli zchuchis glassware to indicate that no, glassware has the same status as, let's say, a metal utensil, which is mekabel tumah, even me'achore, even me'al gabon, even if the sheretz falls on the outside of a metal kli, that metal kli, of a metal pot, right? And a sheretz falls onto the outside of the metal pot, it is mekabel tumah. Apparently the same din would apply even to glassware. Why is that so? Amri, so they gave a following answer, kevan dechi nishtabru yeshlem takana shavinu kikli matechos. Thank you. They gave the status of metalware to glassware. Why? Because it has a takana. What does that mean? Let's see if we can figure out what the words yesh lahem takana, you can fix them up. If a glassware breaks, then what you could do is you put it back into the furnace, those, you know, shattered pieces of glass, and you could again manufacture, recreate the utensil. And in that context, it is very similar to metal. Metal also, apparently, again, we don't have time to analyze this, but you'll Google it when you get a chance, and metal apparently could be reheated, and you could reform the utensil. And therefore, shavinu kikli matachos. So it's really, really something very, very interesting going on. And shavinu means they equated it with, it's referring to glassware. They equated glassware with what? With metal. And in a certain sense here, what we're getting is, I call it a schizophrenia, meaning that the status of glassware is a double status. On the one hand, it is very similar to earthenware. They're both created from sand. And as a result, we said the Rabbanim made gzera, and they said that it would be tameh. And if it has a hole in it, then it's already shvira, and again it loses its status as a kli, and the tumah evaporates. On the other hand, they added a chumrah, a special stringency to glassware, and they determined that glassware would be makabel tumah mi gabeim. If a sheretz falls on the outside of a glass utensil, the utensil is susceptible to tumah. Why? Because it has a similarity to metal kalim. So where does glassware fit in? It seems to be straddling two different categories. It's like an overlap of both a kli cheres, earthenware, and at the same time kli matechos. Matechos means metalware. So the Gemara asks Elameata, if you're telling me the Chachamim imposed onto glassware the strictures of metalware, so therefore it's makabel tumah if the sheretz falls on the outside. And the reason for that is because in both the cases of metal and glass utensils, if it breaks, you can remanufacture it by heating its pieces, its various broken pieces. If that be the case, the Gemara says, then we should apply another principle to glassware that applies to metalware. And that is, yachzeru lutum asam yishana. Now what is yachzeru tum asam liyishana? I'm reading the Hebrew, and now I'm translating the best I can to English. And what we're saying is the following. That what happens when a utensil receives tumah, it was contaminated, then it broke, and then you recreate that utensil from its broken pieces. So the halacha is that with regard to metalware, we have a principle called yachzeru l'tumasam ha'yishana. When you recreate the kli after it broke, it still remains tameh. We're going to have to see why in a minute. And therefore, it would have to be brought to the mikvah in order to purify it. And that's the status of a kli matachos. So with regard to metalware, if it breaks and then you remanufacture the kli from its broken pieces, then the old tumah goes back to its original state. Disnan, we learned in the Mishnah Masech Kalim. It says, kli matachos pshuteyem umekableyem. Tmeim. So you have two types of utensils. You have pshuteim. Pshuteim is a flat kli. So you imagine you have like a frying pan without sides in it. I mean, it's something that you use over the fire. Let's say, I remember my mother used to kasha livers on a flat surface that had little holes in it, a flat metal kli. So that's makabel tumah. That's called pshuteim. And then you have mekableim, which is a receptacle that has a base kibul in it to receive that which goes in it. Tmeim. They receive tumah. Nishbaru. But what happens if they break? After they contracted tumah, they smashed. Taru. At this point, everything is tahar. But chazar v'yosa mehem kelim. If he remanufactures from the broken pieces a utensil that's functional, chazru lutumasam ha'yishana, they go back to the original old old status as Tmeim. And that's not true with regard to glassware. The Ilu, however, Gabi Glass, Klei Zchuchis, in contrast, tonight we have a Mishnah there in Kalim, and the Mishnah says, and it's a whole list of different kinds of materials, Klei Eitz, you have wooden utensils, Klei Or that are made of animal skins, Klei Etzim that are like ivory that are made of bones, Uklei Zchuchis and glassware, Pshuteim Tahorim, they do not have that unique Tuma that we saw in a case of metalware, which means that even if it's a flat, if it's an absolutely flat utensil, nevertheless it's Makabel Tuma. That's only true exclusively in the case of a metal Kli, but not in the case of any other Kalim, not even the case of a Klei Zchuchis. So that's called Pshuteim, a flat Kli, without a base Kibel Tahorim, Umekableim Tmeim, only if it's a receptacle, then it contracts tuma, and then it says nishbaru, if they break, taru, they are purified through breakage, because it's no longer kli, it's not functional. Chazav yosemem kelim, if you recreate from their broken pieces a utensil, is taru, I'm sorry, chazav kelim, mekablim tuma mikan olahaba, from now, henceforth, if a sheretz would fall on them, they contract tuma. So the Gemara is medayik, it makes a diuk in the lashon of the Mishnah. It says mikan olahaba in lemafreya lo. If now a sheretz falls on the kli, then it receives tuma, but lemafreya retroactively it does not be mekabel tuma. So this halacha of chazru l'tumasa v'yishana, which applies to a metal kli, does not apply to glass kli. Why not? If you're telling me there's a similarity between glass and metal kalim, and we saw that if a piece of glassware is what? Just one second. Let me just go over this one. Oh yeah, if glassware. Sheretz falls on glassware on the outside, the glass contracts tuma, and that is because it's similar to metal, and therefore why not go one step further and say it should be similar to metal, and we should apply the principle of chazra tum'asa ma'yishana, that when you reconstruct it, it's tamei. That means l'mafreya, retroactively, it gains its old status of tuma. And the Gemara answers, Avdi Buhu Rabbana Nekeira. The Rabbana wanted to make sure that everybody would know that the status of glassware, as far as Tuma, is only rabbinic. That's called Hekeira. Hekeira means to make a sign and emphasize to people. It's like wearing a, you know, putting up a public flag that says you should know that the Tuma in a case of glassware is only rabbinic. And I'll prove it to you because it doesn't have this halacha of Chazra to Masan HaYishana. And why do we have to make sure that the people understand that the nature of the Tuma in the case of glassware is only rabbinic? Ki hechi, so that the lo lisro falayu truma ukadshim. That if, let's say, you would pour truma into the kli, or kadshim into the kli, and you would think, well, now the truma contracted Tuma, and if we have to burn the truma, but no, this is only rabbinic tuma, and when it comes to rabbinic tuma, we don't burn truma based on the fact that the truma received a rabbinic tuma. Okay, then. So now, where are we up to? We're up to Daf Tezayin Omid Beis. Am I correct?
Yep.
So let's go to Tezayin Omid Beis. Ravashi Omar. Ravashi says, Li'olam l'kli cheres damu. Ravashi is offering the following answer, right? So again, the first answer to the question as to why in the case of klei zchuchis, we don't equate it exactly 100% with metal utensils, and therefore there's no halacha of chazra tumasam hayishana, so that after the glassware breaks and you reconstruct it, we are not going to resurrect from the dead the original status of the kli lemafreya retroactively of tumah. And the reason for that is we want to emphasize to the public that the nature of klei zechuchis is rabbinic, so that people wouldn't come to burn truma. And how do we convey that message very clearly? Because we tell the people, you should know that if a klei zechuchis breaks and you reconstruct it, it does not get its old tuma. Ravashi Omar, Ravashi has another answer to this very, very same question as to why we don't equate make a uniform halacha of tumah that would equate glassware with metalware. Because let's go back to our original position of Reish Lakish, if you recall. Reish Lakish told us that really, essentially, the whole gzera of glassware is because of its similarity to earthenware. Remember, they're both created, manufactured from sand. And therefore, li'olam li'klicheres domu. We equate it with klicheres. So the dinim of klicheres will apply to klei zechuchis. And if that be the case, then the halacha of chazra l'tumasam hayishana, that after you reform the kli from its segments, from its breakage, from broken parts, l'mafreya retroactively gets its old status of tuma, which applies to metalware, is not going to apply to glassware, because glassware is similar to kli cheres. And in the case of earthenware, if it breaks, the pottery shatters, and from its shattered pieces you recreate the kli, it doesn't get its old status as tame. Right? So that the reason why we're gonna, so you have these two paradigms. You have klei cheres, and you have klei matechos. You've got on one side of the equation, you have earthenware. On the other side of the equation, you have metal utensils. Okay, now where do we place, on a rabbinic level, glass utensils? So Rav Ashi is saying that glass utensils are to be subsumed under earthenware, because that's the whole impetus for this enactment of the rabbis, because of the similarity between glassware and pottery and earthenware, because they're both made from sand. Is that it? Is that clear? So Mela, this halacha of chazra tumasa la yishana is unique to metalware. It does not apply to glassware, just like it doesn't apply to earthenware. Yeah, but Rav Ashi's not in the clear, because we said, and we proved this from a Mishnah, that glassware will receive tuma me'al gabeim, meaning if a sheretz falls on the outside of a glass utensil, the glass utensil receives tuma. And that halacha puts it in the category of metalware, and takes it out of the category of earthenware. Says Rav Ashi, and your question from before, that if we equate glassware with earthenware, is lo letamu migabon, it should not receive and contract tuma if the sheretz falls on the outside of the glassware. And yet we proved already from a Mishnah that glassware, like other materials, is not similar to earthenware, but rather it is susceptible to tuma if the sheretz falls on the outside of the kli. The answer is hoil, because v'nireh tocho kibaro. So I'll translate those four words into English, but really, all those four words have one English word, really. All you need is one word here, but I'll translate it literally. Hoil, since, v'nireh, you could see, tocho, the inside, kibaro, like the outside. Rebbe said, what's that in one word in English? Anybody?
Transparent.
It's transparent, exactly. Glassware is transparent. So what the Rabbanan did is as follows. They basically said that glassware is similar in the laws of Tumah V'Tahara to earthenware. And just like in the case of earthenware, if the piece of pottery receives tumah, let's say through the inside of the kli, and then it breaks, it's pure, it's purified, and even if you would reconstruct this piece of pottery from its broken pieces, it would not have any status of tumah, because halach of chazra tumas liyishana is unique and only applies to metal. So kli zchuchus likewise, if a sheretz is metame this glassware, then if it breaks, the glassware breaks, and you reconstruct it from its broken pieces, you put it back into the furnace, it would be tar, it's got the same status as a kli cheres. Ah, if that be the case, you ask me, why is it that if the sheretz falls on the outside of the glass, the Rabbanan said that that glass receives a status of tumah? Why not equate it with cheres? And the answer is that we're not going to equate it with cheres, because there's a fundamental difference between glassware and earthenware. Let's say you're sitting inside a piece of pottery, right? And you're looking with a flashlight, would you know that a sheretz fell on the outside of the kli? No way you could know that. So therefore, the Torah distinguishes between the outside, which is called gabon, and betochon, which is called the inside of the kli. And the Torah establishes that in the case of earthenware, if the sheretz falls on the outside of the kli, it's not makabel tumah. Mashenkin, in the case of glass, if you were sitting inside this piece of glass, you would see the sheretz from the inside. And therefore, there's no difference between tocho and baro. Baro means the outside, like the word brisa means the outside, it's the same sort, and tocho means the inside. So the inside of a glassware and the outside of the glassware are completely the same. And therefore, the glassware is makabel tumah from the outside. So to what extent and in what context do we compare glassware to metal? In what context? So let's go back just to review this, make sure we know this, that in the case of glassware, the only common regulation that applies to both glassware and metal kalim is migabon, means that the tumah, so to speak, penetrates into the kli from the outside. And the reason for that, says Rav Ashi, is because the very unique nature of a kli's chuchus, of a glassware, which is the transparency of the glassware. Okay then? But in all other dinim, we're going to equate glassware with kli cheres. Right, so therefore, we said that in the case of glassware, like kli cheres, if it breaks, then it becomes tar. Whereas in the case of a metallic kli, if it breaks and then you remanufacture the metal kli from its broken pieces, we have halach of chazra l'tumas on hayishana, which means it goes back to its original form of kabbalas tumah. It has that original status. That's not going to apply in the case of glassware, because glassware is similar to pottery, and in both cases, shvirasan zuitarasan, which means that the breakage of the kli, when it's no longer functional, makes it equal to tar. I mean, it completely purifies the kli. If now you reformulate the, you remanufacture the kli, and now a sheretz falls in, that's called mikano lahaba, from now on, it will contract tumah. The only question I want to leave with you here, which is a gigantic machlokas between the Marsha and the Sfasemes, just if you want to put it in your, you know, in your memory bank, is what would be the status of glassware if it didn't have a kli kibul? It wasn't a receptacle, it was flat. And if you remember, we said that a metal kli, even if it's flat, that's called pshute klei matechos, is makabel tumah. Where would glassware fit in? Right? Where would glassware fit in? Because if we're saying that glassware is similar to kli cheres, to earthenware, then it should have to have a kli kibul, a receptacle.
Can I ask if glassware?
Wait a minute, that sounds like Michael. Is that Michael?
Yeah.
Hey, I recognize his voice. How you doing, Michael?
Fine, thank you.
L'chaim.
If glassware is like earthenware,
right,
I probably have to total it when we buy it from a non-Jew.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think the answer to that question is the following: that since there's a great similarity between glassware and metal utensils, in the fact that if you gather together the breakage and you remanufacture it, you can recreate the kli. So the Rabbanon gave kli's chuchis, glassware, the same status as metalware. So again, as we saw, you know, before, the status of kli's chuchis is a bit, you know, schizophrenic, as we called it, because we said that kli's chuchis is makabel tuma me'al gabon, right? Me'al gabon, which is not true for earthenware. So your same question would be appropriate for the question of al gabon if the sheretz came on the back. And we're not going like Rav Ashi. Now, Rav Ashi has a unique approach, that glassware is transparent. But if we leave out Rav Ashi, basically we're back to the original status, the original understanding of Gemara, that to some extent, because of that schizophrenia, glassware is similar to metal. To metals, and that's why it's metami mi'al gabon. And once it's metami mi'al gabon, the Rabbanan said that that you'd have to be tovalit. Correct. You'd have to be tovalit. Now, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here. Again, I don't want to get distracted because I do want to finish the omud. It could be that we don't even need that answer to your question. It could be there's a more basic answer to your question. And okay, I don't know, I'm not sure. But let me just add one more sentence, just for Chazara purposes. Let's keep in mind that although glassware, if it breaks and you recreate the kli, it does not go back to its original status of tumah, but nevertheless, if it breaks with a hole, and you fill in that hole with what? With lead, then, at least according to Rabbi Meir, the halacha would be is that it now has the identical status of a metal kli. Okay. Now at this point in the Gemara is going to ask the question about why in the case of metal kalim do we say chazra tumasan liyashana? The metal kli broke into it, shattered into pieces. They're non-functional. Why, when you recreate the kli, do you reinstate the original status of tumah? So in order to understand that, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, which was quoted back on Yudalit, of Shimon ben Shetach. And Shimon ben Shetach instituted two takonos, two enactments. Number one, tikein ksuba li'isha. Okay, what that means is more complicated. It doesn't mean that he was the inventor of ksuba, but he gave a certain halach called the shibud, that the Baal, when he marries his wife, there's a lien, L-I-E-N, on his property to pay the ksuba. And number two, which is more relevant to our discussion, we're not learning ksubas today, is v'gazar tumah al klei matachos. And he instituted a gzera of kabbalas tumah on metal substances. So Gemara asks, klei matachos d'oraisa dinu? Dechsiv. It says in the parasha, this is called the parasha of Klei Midjan. After the Jewish people defeated, at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, they defeated the Midjanim, and they took the Kalim, and Eliezer HaKohen, the son of Aaron HaKohen, he told them the following, Ach es hazov es hakesef, etc. And basically told them that metal Kalim, like for example silver, made of silver, have to be subject to Tara, meaning you have to purify them because they may have received Tumah in the hands of the Midjanim. So we see clearly that on a Doraisa level, the Torah clearly indicates that metal utensils receive Tumah. So why do I need Shimon ben Shetach? Lo nitzucha, what did he want to establish? Ela l'tumi yishana, for this halacha that if a metal kli breaks into its pieces and then you recreate the kli from its breakage pieces, then it gets its old status. So this whole institution called Chazra Tumah Yishana is all rabbinic. The Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav, what was the historical background to Shimon ben Shetach's Takana? Now, we're going to go back to somebody by the name of Yanai HaMelech, and Yanai HaMelech was married to Shimon ben Shetach's sister. The Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav, Maisa B'shel Tzion HaMalka, okay, she was there at the time of Shimon ben Shetach, and Asa Mishta Libna, she made a party for her son. It's not exactly clear what the nature of the party was. Anyway, Nitmu Kol Keleha. Somehow, all the fancy metal utensils that were prepared for this great banquet were found in an OL. They got stuck in an OL, and somebody died in that OL. So they all contracted tumor, and now she's in a big bind, right? This tremendous pressure for her, because how is she going to be mitire? You need Hazor, Gimel, and Zion. You have to do Mechata. I mean, there's a whole procedure here of purification. So she wanted to circumvent the laws of purification. So what did she do with all these kalim, these metal utensils that were tameh? Shvartam. She had them broken. And then Unisantan Litzaref. She gave it over to a professional, let's call him a smith, and to fix them up, Veritcham, and he took the broken pieces of the metal, and he heated them up, and as a result of the process of putting them into a furnace, Asamem Kalim Chadoshim, he was able to, within a couple of hours before the banquet, he was able to recreate these utensils. And Omru Chacham, the Chacham declared at that point, and this was Shim Ben Shetach, Yachzeru Lutum Asam Ayishana. They still remain Tomei. She did not circumvent the laws of Tara. My timer, why would they make such a gzera? Mishum Geder Mechatos Naguba. Let's understand that according to the Torah law, if a metal utensil, for example, contracts tuma, then the law is that it requires 7 days before you can purify. During that 7-day period, they took the mechatos from the paraduma, and they would sprinkle it on the kalim on the third of those 7 days, and on the last of those 7 days, and then it became tahar. Because after the azah, on Shiva, the Shivas Yomim, then they were put into a mikveh and it became tahar. And she was circumventing the Tzion HaMalka, was circumventing all the laws of Mechata. So Chacham were afraid that, you know what, we would forget about the whole institution of Mechatos, and we'd always use this way of being Metara the Kli. And again, the Sfasemis here has a long discussion about why the Chacham was so nervous and anxious about completely circumventing and forgetting the laws of Mechatos. So the Gemara says, "Hanicha l'man d'yomer." This makes sense according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who holds in Masechta Kalin. Lo l'chol atumos amru el atumas ames bilvad amru shapir. In other words, let's read the other shita for a second. Ella l'man d'yomer l'chol atumas amru ma'ikol meimar. So let's explain. In the case of mess, if a dead body is in the same OL as Kalim, then those Kalim require Tara with Mechatas from the Paraduma. And according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, only in the case of Tumas Mes do you require Mechatas. However, so then it makes sense that since Mechatos is a requirement in the case of Kalim that were in the OL of a mess, it makes sense that we have to make this takana that we shouldn't forget the whole institution of Mechatos. And therefore they made this gzera, that was Shimon ben Shetach's gzera of Chazra Tumasa HaYishana. But there's another man, Diomer, the Tanakama there in Masechta Kelim against Reb Shimon Gamliel. He holds L'chol HaTumas Amru, that this institution of Chazra Tum'asan HaYishana applies for any Tumah, like for example a Sheretz, or another kind of Tumah. So you have a metal Kli that was Makabal, a different kind of Tumah, and now the metal Kli broke into pieces, and you recreated the Kli, manufactured the Kli from its pieces, and it's Tumah. Why would the Rabbanan go that far and be metami something that doesn't require mechatos? Mechatos is a requirement only in the case of Ohel HaMes. And yet, according to the Tanakama of Rav Shimon Gamliel in Kelim, even in the case of a metal kli that contracted tumah from something other than a mess, which would not require for its purification in mechatos, even so, if it breaks and you reformulate the kli, recreate the kli, it goes back to its original state of tumah. Amar Abaye gzera shema lo yikvenu b'chdei taraso. Abaye says no. You know why they made this gzera of Shim ben Shetach? Because they were afraid that he wouldn't really break the kli. You know, you have a metal kli, and you have to break it. How much you have to break it? So let's say you take a hammer, you turn the kli upside down, and you make a hole in the kli. Well, guess what? That might not be enough. We have a shiur, and again, those who are with me in Masechta Erevin, you'll know what I'm talking about, called Kedei Rimon, that the size of the hole, in order to make this metal kli totally dysfunctional, and therefore be metar, it has to be the size in which a pomegranate, which is considered amongst the larger fruits, would fall through the hole. And the fear was, says Abai, that they might not really break the kli to the extent to which it would become tar, a real serious breakage. Maybe they would puncture the kli and make a smaller hole, but let's say a walnut could still fall through that hole. They think that since the walnut goes through the hole, therefore the kli is tar, but that's a mistake. It has to be a much larger hole. So in order to avoid this whole business where we rely on people to break a kli, they said, you know what? Even if you break the kli, you're not going to gain much, because if you try to recreate the kli from its breakage, it's going to get back its old status as tamei. Rav Amar, Rav has a different take on the gzera of Shimon ben Shetach, of Chazra Tuma Yishona, gzera Shemiyomru, Tvila Bas Yoma, Olala. People might think that, look, we knew an hour ago that this kli was tamei, and now, all of a sudden, the kli is back on the table. How do they purify it in 1 hour? It must be that you can take a kli to a mikveh. That's what the onlooker is going to mistakenly conclude. And you can be metarit immediately after it comes out of the mikveh. But the truth is that it, according to the Torah law, it only becomes pure with Harev Shemesh, which means after nightfall, like a Tvul Yom, if you remember, we discussed the Tvul Yom. And they're going to mistakenly think that all you need is just to put it to the mikveh. What they don't realize is that what they're looking at is not really the same kli. It's the old kli that was broken and became purified, and now you reconstructed the kli. But the onlooker doesn't know that. He comes to the mistaken conclusion that you can take a kli that's tameh and put it into the mikveh. My Beinayu, the Gemara says, what's the nafkamina between Abaye and Rava? Ike Beinayu, Diritzifnu Mirtzav. Let's say he takes a metal kli that received tumah, the contracted tumah, and he breaks it completely. He smashes it to smithereens, as we say. Ah, so in this case, the gzera of... Now here Rashi has two interpretations, but we'll go according to one interpretation of Rashi. Rashi says that if we should smash the kli completely, totally, break it into small bits, then we're afraid that if we're metire it, that maybe next time he'll only make a small puncture in the kli, And we're going to apply a bias principle that we're afraid that he won't break it completely. So this time he did break it completely. Next time he might not break it completely. But if you go with Rava Shita, then we're not worried. Why? Because Rava Shita only applies when there's a partial breakage. Somebody might think, well, it's the same old kli. He doesn't realize that the kli was broken. And here in this case where he completely smashed it to smithereens, it's complete, everybody sees, everybody, the onlooker knows that this is not the same old kli. Okay, we have, maybe I'm going to push it for 5 minutes just so we get close to the end of the Amud. We'll try to finish this tomorrow. The Idach Maihi. The Gemara wants to know, you told me that there were 18 gzeros that were voted on in the Aliyah of Hananya. Where are the rest of the 18? We still haven't gotten to the number 18. So the Gemara says, this nine, we have a mission in Mikvos. Okay, let me just give a little bit of an introduction to the Mishnah in Mikvos. We have something called rainwater. If rainwater falls to the ground and it collects, then given a volume called arboim sa, it becomes a mikvah. But if the rainwater is collected in a utensil, then that is called mayim she'uvim. And mayim she'uvim, rainwater collected in a utensil, is possible, is completely invalid for a mikvah. However, what happens if he puts a utensil out in the street, the rainwater falls in, but he didn't realize that the rainwater was going to fall in? Let's say he put it there for a different reason. So in that case, since he didn't have kavana for she'iva means to collect it in a kli, it's not mayim she'uvim. Now, there's something called a tsinar. A tsinar, what they used to do is, in the ground, they used to have pipes that were subterranean, so to speak. Not totally subterranean, but partially subterranean. They were attached to the ground. Anything attached to the ground is not called a kli. It's not called a utensil. That's called mechubar lakarka, something that's attached to the ground. And if the rainwater falls into this pipeline, this tsinar, as it's called in Hebrew, tsinar is a pipe, then that rainwater is still kosher for a mikvah. Why? Because the tsinar is attached to the ground. The rain now gets received in these pipes that are in the ground, and they flow. And when it gets to the end of the pipe, he put a utensil there, and the water fell from this pipe into the utensil. So we have a Mishnah in Mikvos. The Mishnah says, "Hameniach kelim tachas atzinar lekabel mehem megshamim." If he deliberately puts this utensil underneath at the end of this pipeline, and he collects the rainwater in this kli, so that's called mayim she'uvim. That's water that's collected in a utensil, in a kli. That's posel of mikvah. Echad kelim gedolim. Even a very, very large kli. It's so large that you can't move it from place to place. And that would normally not be considered a kli as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned. But as far as mayim she'uvim, to posel the water for mikvah, it's posel. Echad kelim ketanim. Even some small utensil, which is not chashuv in his eyes, but nevertheless, it still has the status of utensil. Afilu kli avanu kli adama. These are various types of kelim made from stone or made from earthenware that are very cheap kind of kelim. He didn't do what's called gibul normally, a very sophisticated manufacturer. Kli glolim, these are kind of marble kind of kelim, and all these kelim like kli glolim are not makabel tumah. Nevertheless, poslim es hamikvah. But now we have machlokas between Rabbi Yisrael Beit Shammai, which we'll pick up Mirzachem tomorrow. Echad ameniach v'echad ashochech. Shocheach. So Beit Shammai say that even if he put the kli there and he forgot about it, and the water fell into the kli, it still has the status of mayim she'uvim. And Beisil Amitari and Beisil say that it is tar b'shocheach, because he didn't really intend to do the she'iva. She'iva means to collect it in a kli. So B'lin Eder tomorrow will try to analyze this machlokas, as the Gemara does, between Beit Shammai and Beisil about shocheach, which is the case where he put the utensil down, and he collected the rainwater in the utensil as it came through these pipes, but he forgot about the kli, and therefore at the moment that the water went in, he was not aware of the fact that his utensil was receiving that water. Okay then? So I both say this is where we're going to stop for now, and Belinetta will pick this up tomorrow. If anybody's interested in a shir on the Haggadah, there was some misunderstanding, please send me a shoot off an email, and we can get together at 7:30 p.m. tonight. Okay then? Wish everyone a great day, and stay healthy. Yeah? Any quick questions? Yeah.
Is there any Indian that when you put the item into the kiln to reproduce it after it was broken, that you're not really recreating exactly what was there before? It's like a new utensil. And therefore, why should it take the original tumma?
Right. So that whole business, that it goes back to its original tumma, is all rabbinic. It's all an enactment. And there are three ways of understanding why they made the enactment. One is that we shouldn't forget about Mechatos, and that would apply at least according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. It won't apply according to the Rabbanon, because Rabbanon say that Chazra Tuma Yishon applies even to other Kelim that don't require Mechatos. The second explanation is Abaye, that the rabbinic enactment was based on the fact that you might not really break the Kli. Obviously, as you say, Jerry, very well, if you break the Kli, then it's tar. But we're afraid you won't break it Kimole Rimon, right? The size of a pomegranate. And then we have the third explanation of Rava, and that is that that we're afraid that somebody, the onlooker, doesn't realize that you recreated the Kli, and all of a sudden, an hour later, a Kli Tomei became Titara. He's going to come to the mistaken conclusion that you took it to the mikvah and you have been tired. So you're right. I mean, certainly on a Doraisa level, once a Kli is non-functional and it breaks, the Tumah is gone. And when you recreate the Kli, it's a whole new Kli. But the Rabbanon, for one of various reasons, made this Takana that Chazra Tumah Yishana. That Takana only applies to Kli Matechos, and it does not apply to Kli Zechuchis. In that sense, Kli Zechuchis is like Cheres, it's like earthenware, because they're both made from sand, and therefore if a Kli Zechuchis breaks, and you take the pieces of glass and you recreate it, it's a brand new Kli, and any tumor would have to be Mikan Ulahav. Okay then?